Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just, for me, has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email this week. He says, thank you for taking my email in question. My girlfriend and I listen to you on the radio, and she respects your opinion as I do. So here's the question. I've been separated for 9 months. I'm working on a divorce. Is it okay to date? I believe it is. But she's not comfortable with being around people who know my divorce is not final. Can you help? He kind of answered it when he said, if she's not comfortable, it's not a good gig. And Pat, you have some questions about dating?
I am 58 years old,
and
I've been divorced for years. I was watching the Oprah show the other day, and they were talking about...
They were talking about sexual desire.
How does that factor in if you're after menopause?
Obviously, being postmenopausal, you know, you aren't going to have the same pheromones, but then the men you're probably going to be dating, they're not going to have that need to mate with you, for children. How do you feel about hooking up with somebody else?
To bring Carol to your station, call John Quick at 317-432-0309. Available as a long-form talk show and in 60-second infomercials for even more revenue opportunity. Carol the Coach, truly refreshing radio, enriching the lives of your listeners.
And welcome to the show. I am Carol the Coach, and I am so happy to be with you right now. I have so much to talk to you about today because we are going to be talking to an author who is absolutely amazingly written this book about how to deal with, as you can imagine, someone who has an addiction. And she's not just talking sex or drugs or alcohol. She's talking about any of the above. So we have Candace Platter who's going to be talking about her book. And it's been an amazing book I've just finished reading called Loving an Addict. What is so unusual about this book is that she has obviously done a really good job of discussing her life issues in a way that is understandable for everybody. So hopefully what you'll find out is as you read Loving an Addict, Loving Yourself, the top 10 survival tips for loving someone with an addiction, you too will have the availability to find out that the top 10 survival tips for loving someone with an addiction has to do with focusing on you. And are you having difficulty? Are you having difficulty trying to figure out what do you do if you have an addiction? This show is all about sexual addiction. And I just can't emphasize enough how important it is in a situation like this to really maintain your own sense of self. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about ways that you can take care of yourself. It's here on Carol the Coach. I am a psychotherapist and personal life coach. And I kid you not, this is an area that I really felt was important. So important that I really decided I was going to obviously designate my life to helping people that had the addiction. And that it can be hard to do. I mean, I have to tell you, it's a dark world. When people have addictions, they don't know what to do. They don't know where to go. They don't even know if they want help. And so sometimes some of the very most important things to do is to really look at what kind of consequence is occurring. You know, why would you even consider wanting some help? Now, I got to tell you, it can be difficult because usually most people want to change, but they don't know what they need to do to make that change happen. And they're ambivalent. They're like, okay, what should I be doing? You know, do I really want to give up some of the best life situations that have brought me, just an amazing high? And yet really they tend to then fight with their own sense of self. You know, they know there are consequences. They know their life is not together. They know that they're living in secrecy. They're hiding from themselves. And literally, they really are not sure what they can do and if they can do it. And so any addict will tell you the first step in making a decision about what you want to do in your life is deciding, yes, indeed, you have a problem and you're tired. You are tired of living that life that is in secrecy, that is against your integrity, where you are no longer focusing on your family or your work. You're focusing on the addiction itself, that it's occupying every bit of your mind. And I just can't emphasize enough that I understand that you could have ambivalence and be right on the brink of saying, okay, I've had it, enough is enough. And that's why I've devoted this show to you and to the partners of sex addicts. And, you know, one of the things in interviewing Candace Platter tonight is, you know, when somebody has a sexual addiction, they typically have at least one, if not two or three other addictions. Maybe it is drugs and alcohol. Maybe it's workaholism. Maybe they're an overspender. They have a financial disorder. They gamble. So, you know, treating one addiction may not be enough. We may have to look at the whole person and decide what should we tackle first. Now, the interesting thing is when we worked with addiction 20 years ago, we said, let's do something one step at a time. If somebody smokes and they drink, don't take away their cigarettes, let's work on the alcohol. But now what we've found is that therapy and treatment is much more effective when you work on all aspects of the addiction, in part because one can trigger the other. Or if you suppress one, then another addiction will come out. And so we work really diligently on figuring out how we can address each addiction so that they all get met and they're taken care of simultaneously. And that's why there's a lot of dual treatment centers available. And I can't emphasize enough how important it is to really do a full-fledged assessment of where your life's going, what you need to work on, and You know, I always say, could you be honest? Could you tell your wife? Could you tell your husband? Could you tell your mother? Could you tell your best friend? My guess is no, you couldn't. So that is what we are going to be talking about tonight. You know, Candace Platter has written this book, and she starts out talking about self-respect and that you can only change yourself. And we know that, don't we? I mean, if you look at the Serenity Prayer, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That's because basically we typically can only work on ourselves and know that that's the only thing we have control over. And, you know, can you really love somebody with an addiction and stay healthy? Because we know the old adage, you didn't cause, you can't control, and you certainly can't cure somebody else's addiction. You can only really work on yourself. So she'll talk about concepts like enabling versus helping. And boy, that's hard. You know, I talk to so many people. They come into the office and they say, you know, I found his porn on the site, and I deleted all the history, and I erased all of his files, and hopefully that will be good enough. And yet, that isn't even going to make a dent in whether somebody really wants to look at pornography or not. I have always admired people who, you know, if they have a problem with spending, with gambling, with using drugs, they will turn their money over to a financial advisor so that they are not the ones in control of their money. They know that ultimately what they have to do is turn it over to somebody who can help them to be accountable when they're first learning how to deal with this recovery issue. So, again, there's no reason for you to invent the wheel. As a matter of fact, what I would ask you to do is to listen to the show, read the right information, go to some 12-step groups, get yourself a sponsor, find somebody who has actual experience in this situation, and, you know, turn it over. Turn it over to your higher power and congratulate yourself for getting the help, finding the resources, and not doing it by yourself. Because that is what would easily be your demise if you try to do it by yourself. You know, I run a men's group, and I have been told by so many professionals that men's groups are so important to the well-being of potential clients with this disorder. And I would love to tell you I have enough women. Well, I don't know that I'd love to tell you this, but I mean, right now I'm doing men because that's the majority of my sex addicts. And they are an honest bunch of guys that really do a great job of getting to the root of what the problem is because they're talking their own language. You know, if you spot it, you got it. They get it because they see it, they know it, they feel it. And so they're able to very delicately but very assertively check in with other people about what is going on. And I know the other group members are just kind of going, wow, how did they know I felt that way? Well, that's the beauty of groups. When you do groups, whether that be 12-step support groups or therapy groups, you look at some issues that you just don't have the time or the strength or the fortitude to see. And that's why group therapy is considered an amazing intervention when you're trying to get clean. And so if you want some assistance, you can always email me at carolthecoach@aol.com. You can go to my website, www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach. You can listen to the show every Monday night or go to iTunes, download all the shows I've done. I've done over 30 of them with different guests and experts, so you'll get a whole host of free information that won't cost you a thing. Or just tune in every Monday night on your computer. They say that internet radio is the way to go, and so I'm always pretty amazed when I get so many people from around the world who are listening to the show because they're Googling in on iTunes. They're Googling in sexual addiction. And unfortunately, but fortunately for me, I'm the only show that pops up. So with that being the case, I really work hard at giving you factual information that I really think will help. So I hope that you will be able to understand and appreciate how important it can be to get the right information. And I can absolutely recommend books. I can get you to the right meetings. You know, if you're in an area that you don't have any meetings in your area, well, guess what? I can get you to the right meetings because there are telemeetings. And when you do telemeetings, that you can listen in on a meeting and participate with people all over the world. It just does not get better than that. And so I highly recommend that for people that really, you know, don't have availability, but they want that 12-step work. And so I can't express how important that is. It's just so important to, you know, be listening to yourself and get the support of others so you're not by yourself. And, of course, when you have other people that have been there and done that, then you're not inventing the wheel or reinventing the wheel. You are truly making a difference in your own life because you're seeking the support of other people that can help you. And I really think that's absolutely imperative. All right. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. You know, sometimes people think they have a sexual addiction. In actuality, they have a love addiction. And Pia Melody is this woman who actually works, you know, out of the Meadows, and she works on her own. And she has been working for more than 15 years on treating addicts who face love addiction. And so she talks about ways to make things better by getting rid of some of the toxic patterns played out by love addicts. You know, she says, you know, if you're really codependent and you have put yourself on the back burner so that other people will be at the front burner. If you've had childhood experiences of abandonment or romantic partners, friends, and associates who you're totally engulfed by, if you do this tango dance where they activate your primary fears, you're afraid of being abandoned or left out, then you need very clearly to work on what possibly could be a love addiction. And love addiction is a little bit different because it's not obsessing about sex. It's obsessing about being left and abandonment. We really do believe that people who have this disorder have unhealed pain from childhood abandonment and the feelings that they cannot be safe in a world without somebody there in their life. That can be extremely tough. So we are going to see if we can't find Miss Candace Platter. We are going to be doing a commercial, and then we'll be back. This is Sex Help with Carol, the coach, and you're listening to Hope, Strength, and Recovery. And you know what that's like, hope, strength, and recovery. It's essential in the world of sexual addiction. All right, well, we seem to be having some technical difficulties all the way around, so what I'm going to do is just talk to you a little bit more. And if we have Candace Platter, I'm going to ask you to call me at, write down this number, 646-595-3284. And in the meantime, if you are listening and you have a question about sexual addiction, please give me a call. And again, that number is 646-595-3284. You're listening to Sex Help with Carol, the coach. Now, I happen to believe that most people that are listening already know they have a problem. They're just not quite sure what to do about it. You know, they're ambivalent, they're scared, they don't know who to talk to, they feel shame and guilt, they want more in their life, and yet they really aren't sure how to get that. Well, if that's you, you can feel free to call me at 646-595-3284, and I will be happy to help you with any questions that you have, because it is difficult to do this on your own. You know, we've talked about the many different types of sexual addiction, and you remember that they include fantasy sex, anonymous sex, exhibitionism, voyeurism, pedophilia, frauderism, prostitution, and all sorts of different types of sex, pornography, internet sex, cyber sex. And we know that this did not happen. This did not happen years ago. This is absolutely a rare situation that, you know, there has always been sexual addiction. But it is truly the internet that has brought this into play and made everybody obsessed about sexuality. And that can be very, very difficult because, you know, you're all pioneers in this situation. You all are relatively new to it. You don't know what to do, and you don't know how to help. You don't know where to get the help. You don't know how it's affecting you, and you don't know how it's affecting the people you love. When I work with people, they very clearly have to identify what are the consequences. You know, how is this affecting family and friends? Today I was talking to an addict, and I said, you got to do exactly what you've got to do. You've got to make an effort to change the life and lives of everybody that you've affected when you have this illness. That not only means make amends if you're not going to hurt people, but it means changing your ways, putting them first, going beyond what you need to do normally to reassure somebody that they do come first. You are sorry. You are changing your ways. Can you imagine that? That you would be able to, clean up your side of the street in such a way. Maybe it's going to take treatment, a treatment center. Or maybe you're going to have to see a certified sexual addictions therapist. They say the average amount of time to get healthy if you have this illness is anywhere from 2 to 5 years. And it's interesting because when I did therapy, I really typically could work with somebody in 12 sessions or less. And they were much, much better. And they could take a break. And they could graduate, so to speak. And then if they had another problem or if it came back, we'd encourage them to work on other issues or to do a little tweaking. But in this work, this is serious stuff. This is life or death. You know, I don't know about you, but one of the things that they very clearly say is that this is a progressive disease that doesn't get better on its own. You have to be able to, you actually have to be able to follow the steps that it takes to make things better. All right, we are now going to be talking with Candace Platter. Candace, this is Carol Sheets, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Carol. I'm so excited
to have you. Yes, you are an author. You have just amazed me with your book. And
Thank you.
Yeah, it's how old is this book, Loving an Addict, Loving Yourself?
This book is about 2.5 years old now.
Wow, it has so much good information. What inspired you to write it?
Well, you know, I was working in an agency in the downtown East Side area of Vancouver, which is the lowest income postal code we have in the city. I was working with addicts and alcoholics, clients, and I started getting phone calls and emails from their loved ones who wanted to come and see me. And that just grew and grew and grew. They were at the end of their rope. They didn't know what to do. I kept getting more and more calls from them. And as I became known for working with loved ones, I just kept getting more people contacting me. And I knew that I couldn't see all of them. I couldn't work with all of them. And I thought, you know, I have some information that I would like to share with people who I will likely never meet and who are really struggling and suffering right along with their addicted loved ones. And the only way I could really do that was to write a book. So that's what I did.
And then you broke it down into such readable chapters. I mean, you know, oftentimes you wonder when you're involved with somebody that appears to have addictive behaviors, you wonder if you're blowing it out of proportion, if you're overly worried. So what would you tell people? How do you know if someone you love is an addict?
Well, you know, that's a really hard assessment to make sometimes because addicts are, they become very skilled in the art of denial and really are able to hide for long periods of time what it is that they're doing, regardless of what the addiction is. I work with addiction across the board. It's not just alcohol and drugs. It's eating disorders, smoking, gambling, sex addiction, love addiction, you know, any kind of behavior that's interfering with somebody's life to the point where they really need some help. So getting back to your question, there are some things that that are kind of red flags for people. If the person that you love is starting to get in trouble with the law, for example, that's a big red flag. If somebody is going to a lot of doctors all of
Well, I do believe we just lost Candace. So, Candace, if you can call back in, that number is 646-595-3284. The board just seems to be absolutely wacky. I don't know if, there we go. Oh, good, Candace. I'm glad we got you back on. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I'm so sorry about that. We were having a thunderstorm. I don't know if that has anything to do with it.
But whereabouts are you?
We're in Indianapolis, Indiana.
And you're in Vancouver now,
are you not?
Yes, I am. I'm in Vancouver, yeah.
So then can you tell me, are there things that loved ones can do that will actually change a situation for the better? Because you know that's the number one thing that they want to do.
Yes, there are definitely things that can change the situation for the better. The most important thing is for the loved ones to get off the roller coaster of addiction that they're accompanying the addict on. So what happens more than anything else is that the loved ones become addicted to the addict's addiction. And what I mean by that is that when the addict in their life is doing well, then they're doing well.
Uh-huh.
And when the addict isn't doing well, then they're not doing well. And they just keep going through the cycle over and over and over again. And what they need to do is be able to step away from that and start looking after themselves. You were talking about love addiction before. I was listening in on the show when I was waiting for you, and you were talking about putting your own self on the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the loved ones of addicts do regularly. They put their own needs, their own lives on the back burner, sometimes for many, many years, and sometimes they grew up this way, being encouraged to do that in their families of origin, so they just continue the pattern. But what they need to do is step back from doing that and start looking at their own lives, taking care of their own lives, and not being so enmeshed with the addict, and to stop enabling the addict as well. And I think maybe we're going to be talking about that.
Well, absolutely.
So those are the kinds of things that they need to be able to do. So if we're going to be talking about enabling, I can explain more about that later.
Yeah, please do. Go ahead and tell us the difference between helping and enabling.
Okay. The way that I describe it, I try to have really simple definitions for things for people,
uh-huh.
But the way I describe it is that enabling behaviors keep the addiction going, and helping behaviors put an end or stop the addictive behaviors. Now, having said that, there is no guarantee that a loved one can stop an addict's addiction, because that's really up to the addict.
Mm-hmm.
But what has to happen is that the addict needs to stop being so comfortable in his or her addiction. We have a wonderful commercial on television. It's a cheese commercial. And there's an elderly couple who are the parents, and they have maybe 50-year-old children still living with them, still having dinner with them. The elderly parents are kind of rolling their eyes at each other, kind of wishing that the kids would just get out.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the tagline for this commercial is, "Stop cooking with cheese."
Mm.
Because what it's saying is that if you stop cooking with cheese, they won't want to sit at your table and eat.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be a consequence there. What we need to do is make the addict more uncomfortable using the addiction. Boundaries need to be set. Healthy boundaries need to be set.
So give us an example of some healthy boundaries.
Yeah. When enabling is going on, these boundaries are not in place. One of the behaviors I see frequently is that parents, for example, are continuing to financially support adult children who are addicted.
Mm-hmm.
They pay their rent, or they let them stay at home. they pay their bills, or they, you know, if they're at home, they allow the addict to not contribute to the household. This is not good for anybody. This is not good for the parents. This is not good for the addict. This is, to me, not a loving act. It feels like it's loving for the parents, but it's really not a loving act toward the addict.
You know, I wrote an article that was so well-received by the public, and it was called When You Help, You Hurt, which really means when you enable, you're
when you
hurting
enable.
The person. Because
yeah.
clearly, when you enable, it allows them to continue their behavior. I mean, if you're not
That's
charging
right.
rent, they're going to have
right.
more money for cocaine. And
yes.
and if you call the boss and say they're sick,
yes.
they may not lose their job, but they're learning that someone will always bail them out.
Somebody will rescue them. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are no consequences for an addict, why should they stop doing what they're doing? Why should they stop?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
now, in the world
be...
of sex addiction, Candace, so oftentimes we have men and women who get so much pleasure from in their brain, their reward center lights up because they're engaged in an activity that makes them momentarily feel good, and of course, after the fact, shame and guilt set in,
right.
the secrecy sets in. They realize
mm-hmm.
that they've caused some problems, but they quickly forget that when they want that reward center to light up again.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're always teaching loved ones to really set healthy boundaries, and that may mean, you know, we are going to put something on the computer so that you have no access at home to internet pornography. Or,
right.
you know what, we're going to work on a budget so that if you end up spending more than $50 at a time, it's going to alert me, and I won't be in denial. I'll see some of the things that are going on so I can make a decision of whether to leave, whether to go to more support groups, whether to get a separate bank account.
Whether to get some counseling
Absolutely.
To help yourself. Yeah. Can I say a couple of things about the point that you're making?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The ironic thing about addiction is
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we start using addictive behaviors. I myself am a recovering addict with 25 years now, clean and sober. And I remember my early days as if it was yesterday. But the irony is we use addictions to make ourselves feel better. It's kind of a twisted self-care. It's not a healthy self-care, but we're trying to take care of ourselves in some kind of way. And it always comes around and sort of bites us, right? But that's the ironic part of addiction, is that we're really trying to make ourselves feel better. When a loved one is involved with somebody who's doing that and understands that what they're doing isn't working, what the loved ones are doing isn't working, when boundaries begin to be set, many people don't understand that there are three phases to setting boundaries. They just think, okay, I'm going to set a boundary here. The first is, what is your actual boundary? Identifying what the healthy boundaries are for you. They might be different for you as a loved one than they'd be for me as a loved one. So identifying what they are, what you would be able to live with in terms of setting a boundary. Then how to actually set boundaries. Some addicts get really angry when no is said to them.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you set a clear, healthy boundary? What kind of words do you use? How can you be assertive doing this? And then the third part of it is maintaining the boundary. Because as soon as an addict hears the word no, there's going to be a manipulation going on in their minds about, how can I make this different? I don't want to hear no. I want what I want, and I want it now. And as soon as the loved one gives in to the addict after setting a boundary,
mm-hmm.
as soon as they cave, they're giving the addict the message that they will cave, And all the addict has to do is keep kind of poking at them and pushing them and manipulating them, and they'll cave. No big deal.
Because they've caved before.
Because they've caved before. Exactly. So what has to change is you know the boundary you want to set and you feel confident in that. You know how you're going to say it to the addict. You maybe need some help with that, but you get the help you need and you say it to the addict, and then you maintain that boundary.
So can you give me an example of what would be a boundary? How do you set clear, healthy boundaries, and then how do you maintain it?
Okay. One might be, it's kind of a little bit of a tough love stance, but it's saying to the person, you know, I love you. I love you so much that I just can't continue watching you destroy your life. It's tearing my heart out. I just can't continue watching you do this. And I also respect myself, so I'm going to choose not to watch you do this to yourself. So if you really need to destroy yourself and sabotage your life, you're going to have to do it somewhere else. But if you want help to get into a recovery program, when you're wanting help, I am here for you 100%. Not 110%. Don't work harder than the addict in your life. I really want to say that. Don't work harder than the addict in your life. I'm here for you 100% if you will give 100%. But while you're in active addiction, I'm not willing to be here anymore. And it's because I love you and because I just can't watch it. That would be a healthy boundary.
And Candace, don't you think that for most people that have not dealt with they haven't read information, they haven't been to a therapist, they haven't been to a support group. They really, they don't know what a healthy boundary is. And so
exactly. When
the addict starts to make them feel guilty or makes them promises, they back down because they want to believe.
Or an addict might say, you know, you're a lousy mother. If you really loved me, you wouldn't do this to me. Yeah, and this is one of the biggest reasons why I wrote the book, because it helps people identify what boundaries they want and need to set, how to set them, and how to maintain them. And, you know, if people feel like they need help with that, then people like myself, therapists who do work with loved ones, can be accessed. And you know, you can get some help from somebody in a professional capacity who really can help you with that. There are other places like Al-Anon, which are, you know, it's a great program for people in this situation. There's so much support and love and fellowship and sponsorship, and it's another way to go. There are treatment centers now that have meetings and groups for the loved ones. Whether your addicted loved one is in their program or not, some places allow you to come. So maybe people can be checking out, you know, how to go about getting help. I'm also very seriously considering running a group over the phone for loved ones, maybe in January. So if anybody's interested in that, they could get in touch with me. And let me know.
What is your website or phone number?
My website is www.candaceplatter.com, and I think maybe I should spell that because Candace and Platter could be spelled wrong. So Candace is Candace, and Platter is Plattor. So it's candaceplatter.com, and my email is candace@candaceplatter.com. So if anybody's interested.
That's exciting. Now, that would probably be a group that would cost some money, right?
It will cost some money, yep. Mm-hmm. It won't be exorbitant, though, you know, but it'll be cheaper than therapy, than one-to-one therapy. There would probably be about 12 people maximum in the group. So if you're interested, it's good to get in touch with me soon. And, you know, as I receive emails, it'll probably, get me to get the group started. So, I invite people to let me know if they're interested. I also want to say that.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry? Okay, I also want to say that.
Phone number?
Yes, I do have a phone number. It's 604-677-5876. But it's better to email me. I generally can get back to emails faster than I can get to phone calls. So I do want to let people know that this year in January I published a workbook called Loving an Addict, Loving Yourself, the Workbook. And it allows people to go deeper into their own issues, allows the loved ones to go deeper. Like, why am I a people pleaser? How did that start? What do I respect myself? And in what situations do I respect myself? How do I sometimes act not respecting myself? How do I want to change that? You know, those kinds of questions in the workbook. So if you're not able to access therapy and counseling in terms of looking at your own issues of being involved with people with addictions, the workbook might be very handy and helpful for you.
Absolutely. And how can they get your book and that workbook?
Well, they can get it from Amazon. They can get it from not sure if you can still get it from my website. If you go onto my website and click on the cover of the books, it'll guide you to where you can get them. There was a time when you could get them through my website, but I think now we're guiding people to Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Chapters online. So it's also in a number of bookstores across Canada and the United States, and I'd like it to be in more bookstores. I'd really like to get my book into more places so that people can access it. So if you go to your local bookstore and they don't have it, maybe you could ask them to order it for you and just direct them to my website. Just give them the name of the book and my name, and they can order that through me.
That sounds great. Now, it was interesting because in the book there was a controversial issue, and I wanted you to talk a little bit about that. You clearly state that addiction is really a choice, and that,
yes.
And you know, a lot of people say it's not a choice. So, will you explain? You're obviously a reformed addict in recovery, and your mission is to help people who love addicts. So, explain how you see addiction being a choice.
Okay, my mission is also to help addicts. I work with both, but I hope your listeners aren't hearing a lot of banging. They're doing some renovation in my building, and unfortunately, they're doing it right now. So if you hear that, that's what it is.
Okay.
There are a lot of different schools of thought about addiction, and you know, one of them is the disease model, which the 12 steps. The 12-step groups use. Another is about genetic predisposition. You know, we think that there's a genetic predisposition, especially with something like alcohol and drugs, the mind-altering addictions. The scientists haven't completely, definitively told us that there is, but I see it all the time. So I believe that there is a genetic predisposition. There's also, you know, nature versus nurture, where we learn in our homes ways to cope with life. So if we grow up in an alcoholic home, for example, or we grow up in a home where people spend a lot of money when they're stressed, the chances are that that's what we're going to do. When the going gets tough, the tough go shopping, or the tough reach for a bottle or something. And we learn that in our homes. So you know, there's just a lot of different ways to think of addiction. But whether it's a disease, there's also, of course, brain involvement. Of course, it's, you know, it's got a physical component. But whether it's a disease, whether it's a predisposition, whether it's something that we've learned, in our homes and our families of origin, it really almost doesn't matter. Because ultimately, you're making a choice about whether you're going to continue that behavior or you're going to learn different ways to cope with life. Even if it's a disease, you know, I have Crohn's disease, so sometimes what I look at when I think of disease, Crohn's has no cure, right? I can't just say to myself, I'm not going to have Crohn's disease anymore. I wish I could, but that's not how it works. That's the same for diabetes, cancer, you know, those kinds of diseases. With addiction, if it is a disease, it can be arrested. It's the kind of condition that can be stopped. All you have to do is stop doing it, is make the choice to stop doing it. That's not so simple. You know, it's not so easy. There's work to be done in making that choice. But it's ultimately a choice. People, there are, you know, millions of people who believe that it's a disease in the 12-step model and have recovered or are in recovery. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, no matter what else it is, I see it as a choice, and that's how I work with clients.
Well, that sounds very
empowering. And a lot of my clients say, good, I'm glad. I really, you know, because this gives me some control over this. I'm not completely powerless over this. And, you know, a lot of people tend to feel better about that approach. So does that make sense?
Oh, 100%. I think that's very empowering. And it gives them not only the hope, but the ability to believe that with the right resources and the right support, their life can be better.
Yes, and the right attitude. I really want to make this choice. I really see that what I've been doing to myself isn't working in terms of the life I would really like to have. So I'm going to make a different choice. That's
so now,
what it's really
lastly,
all about.
In your book, you talk about the importance of self-care, and you heard me talking a little bit about that too. So what are some of the main things that people need to do to take better care of themselves, which I really believe is a large part of your focus, good boundaries and taking care of oneself?
Yes, and learning that we can't control anybody else. That's that's the other really big part of my focus. When I talk about self-care, I'm looking at it holistically across the board. So there are four kind of avenues of self-care. So there is the physical, the emotional, the mental, and the spiritual aspects of self-care. So with physical, you know, we're looking at things that people talk about all the time. We're looking at the healthy eating, making sure that we're exercising our bodies, getting enough sleep, and, you know, taking care of our personal hygiene, doing things for ourselves like getting manicures and pedicures and, you know, buying nice clothes and accessories for ourselves if we can afford that, and, you know, taking care of ourselves on a physical, anything that has to do with the body. Emotionally, it's looking after yourself in ways that keep you feeling grounded and balanced. So this is going to be different for different people, depending on whether you're an introvert or an extrovert type of thing. You know, like maybe you need time to yourself that you haven't been getting. Maybe you need to read that book that's been sitting on your bed table for a long time. Maybe you'd like to get in touch with some friends and have a play date. One of the things that I really like in terms of self-care is HALT. And that comes from 12-step programs. Do you know the HALT acronym?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hungry.
So hungry, angry, lonely, tired. So if you're feeling kind of off and you're not quite sure what to do for yourself in order, you know, to really be taking care of yourself, you can ask yourself, you know, am I hungry? Is my blood sugar low? Do I need a snack? Do I need something to eat? Do I need a piece of chocolate? You know, for the A, you know, am I angry? Or maybe am I sad? Am I feeling anxious? Do I need to talk to somebody about a feeling that I have? Do I need to get a resolution on something? For the L, it's lonely. Am I feeling lonely? Do I need to reach out to somebody? Do I need to maybe talk to somebody about how I'm feeling? Right? And the T is tired. Am I tired? Am I getting enough good sleep? Am I giving my body what it needs that way? Do I need to take a nap in the middle of a sunny day? Do I need to go home, close the curtain, and take a nap, you know? And really looking at what we need to do for ourselves in any given moment. Sometimes,
I was going to say, that makes a lot of sense. Now, what about the other two components, spiritual and...
You've got mental, especially for people like myself who are getting a little older. You know, it's they say that the brain is a muscle, and if you don't use it, you'll lose it. And I can't tell you how many times I go into the room and I say, what did I come into this room for, you know? And we want to keep our brains sharp. We want to keep our minds sharp. So things like, keeping our activities interesting. You know, do you like to play chess? Do you like to play Scrabble? Doing some things that are communal as well, like maybe taking a class, taking advantage of technology, like learning, if you don't already know, how to email, text, figuring those things out and using those not addictively, but using those with people. Angry Birds is a good one when you're standing on the grocery line. You know, that takes care of the mental part.
And then what about that spiritual component? We only have about another minute, and I want to hear about that.
Oh, the spiritual component is so important. It's for peace of mind. It's for security. You know, the spiritual, a belief is only what makes sense to us. So spiritual doesn't have to be religious, but it can be. Spiritual for some people is, you know, being in nature, doing yoga, meditation, doing mindfulness exercises, being in the moment, having a spiritual teacher. And I think one of the most important parts of spiritual self-care is learning how to embrace uncertainty, because that's what we have in the world, is uncertainty. And I think everybody's trying to stay very safe and certain, and that's kind of not how the world is. So learning how to be surprised, learning how to deal with disappointment, you know,
and also
embracing
that belief that there, you know, things do happen for a reason. At least what can you learn from it, and how can you grow
exactly
stronger, which is a very spiritual concept.
What are the nuggets? What are the lessons in this? What can I get from it? How can I turn it around? How can I reframe it for myself? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So, Candace, obviously, you know your stuff, and you have made it a mission to educate. Again, if people want your book, they can either take a look at maybe at www.candaceplatter.com.
Yep.
They can email you, Candace, at candaceplatter.com, or they can actually go to Barnes & Noble, order the book, Loving an Addict.
Or Amazon. Any of the bookstores online will have it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, or they can go to their local bookstore and ask for it as well. And if they do that, then they might be able to get more copies coming into their bookstores for other people who might need it too. So it could be a nice act for them to do. But, you can definitely get it online.
Well, and it sounds like that workbook is equally important. People love to work on themselves, and you break it down and teach them how to do that. So I thank you
with a nice cup of tea.
With a nice cup of tea, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for making this your mission, and it's so readable, very enjoyable, and incredibly insightful.
Thank you so much, Carol. Thank you.
And you're welcome. All right. Well, that was Candace Platter, and we were so happy to have her on the line, and we're looking forward to other experts. In the meantime, I do want you to get her book. It's absolutely amazing. Any addiction would benefit from it. Any partner would benefit from it. And as I say every week, you know, there'll only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself and to have strength, hope, and recovery, and to make the right choices. We'll see you again next week. Have a great day.